Resolution 26-164, moved by Councilor Haskam, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby reconvened into regular open session of Council at
6:30.
6:30 p.m. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 26-165, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held on April 21st, 2026. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. Back into open session. We'll have a roll call once again.
Councillor Morley Haskell.
Councillor Debbie Zulak.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Mike Ekinen.
Clerk Administrator Carly Britton.
Deputy Clerk Mary Smith.
Public Works Superintendent Thomas Stoneman.
Mayor David Board. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. To item 11.1, resolution 26-166, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Haskell. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the deputation from Deborah Loosemore, CEO, Westbury Sound Health Center Foundation, on update of foundation activities and upcoming walk, run, pool event for information purposes. Okay, well, thank you for attending, and certainly in person as opposed to Zoom. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Mayor Moore, and thank you very much for having me here this evening. And very much looking forward to sharing some information with you about the West Perry Sound Health Center Foundation. My name is Deborah Loosemore. I'm the CEO of the foundation, not to be confused with Donald Sanderson, who's the CEO of the West Perry Sound Health Center. Although we do work closely together, as the foundation is the fundraising partner of the hospital. And like almost every hospital that I'm aware of in Canada, the foundation exists because the province of Ontario, while funding hospitals as part of our healthcare system, does not fund the purchase of medical equipment or technology or actually furnishings or anything that is not part of the building, with some very rare exceptions within the hospital. So when you walk into the hospital, everything you see that is not physically part of the building has been purchased by donor dollars. We have the great fortune of having an extremely generous region, generous community of people who live and work in this beautiful region, as well as people who vacation here, whether they cottage or camp here, or people who have family ties. And it's been due to the generosity of those people that the foundation has been able to work with the hospital to make sure that we are able to offer the level of advanced healthcare that we have here in the region. Next slide, please. Like most charitable organizations, the foundation has a formal mission and a set of values, but really, why are we here? We are here so that when you come to the hospital, when you need care, you can trust that your healthcare team has the equipment and the technology they need to provide the best possible care at the highest level. Next slide, please. And we've been able to do this because of the awesome support. From April 1, 2020 to March 31st, 2025, and actually I'm going to say to March 31st, 2026, because we've just completed our fiscal year, $21,248,264 has been donated to the foundation. And that has come in the form of people who've attended events, which I'll talk about a little bit more later, people who have made donations, and people who have very generously left gifts to the foundation in their will. Over 9,189 donors in total. And in that same time frame, we've been able to transfer $19 million plus to the hospital and put some of that into the endowment. And as you know, an endowment is the insurance plan for the future, we could say. It's a fund that allowed to withdraw from. We're only allowed to put money in and then hold those donations in perpetuity so that they can earn interest and income to be used for the purposes that we exist. Currently, the endowment at the foundation is just over $4.7 million, and the very first donation to the endowment was made in 1996. So it has been a long time and growing, and primarily due to bequests to people who left generous gifts in their will for the endowment. Next slide, please. The foundation board of directors has established a strategic direction. Four components to it. The first is to meet the ongoing special project capital needs of the hospital, and the second is to eliminate the backlog of deferred purchases. The hospital has a very robust system to identify the capital equipment needs, what equipment is needed because the current equipment is going to come to end of life, which usually means it comes off warranty. And if it's equipment that's used indirectly in patient care, you don't want a piece of equipment that cannot be serviced or maintained. And there is another, but there's a whole other category of equipment and furnishings within the hospital that, as long as it works, we won't replace it. It's only when it stops working that it becomes a problem, and these are things like dishwashers and lawnmowers and a really cool Zamboni that cleans the floors throughout the hospital. As long as those are working, regardless of their age, they will stay in service, but at a certain point, they're going to need to be replaced. So between those pieces of equipment that we know are end of life and at some point soon are going to break down and not be fixable, and equipment that is coming to end of life or that has been replaced by new technology, and so we want, the hospital wants the best, newest version, that's over $9 million currently between now and 2030 that needs to be financed by the foundation. So that is the ongoing capital needs and some of the deferred purchases. And that does not include things that are outside of the regular current operations of the hospital. You may be aware that the hospital has applied to the province for an MRI machine, permission to purchase an MRI machine. The hospital is responsible for all the costs related to purchasing that machine, creating a space for it, and then connecting it to the systems of the hospital, which will probably be somewhere between $6 and $8 million total cost. But the province has to get permission for that to happen because, of course, the province then pays for the ongoing procedures that are done with that machine. And that would be in addition to that $9 million. Another strategic direction is to growing the endowment fund to $30 million by 2050. And I will say I'm quite glad there's a very long runway for that because that is a challenging goal. And, of course, to ensure that there's strong governance and accountability policies and practices. As an organization that purely exists to raise funds from the public and then apply those funds in line with the expectations of the public, we take accountability and stewardship of donor dollars very seriously, and our board has some very strict guidance around how we operate overall in that area in particular. And this is part of it, is reporting back to the community on how the foundation operates, what we're spending those dollars on, and what we're accomplishing, so that you can trust that the impact that your donations are having is the impact that you want to have. One of the very important things we do, of course, is to connect with the community, and our special events are one of the ways that we do that, a very important way that we do that, and in my opinion, the most fun way that we do that. And this year we have five, and I want to talk to you about those and then come back to Walk, Run, Poll and perhaps put a gentle challenge in front of you in regards to that event. So Walk, Run, Poll is our big community event. Registration is open now. We have a 5-kilometer run or walk or roll or poll or whatever you want to do in downtown Parry Sound. It's scheduled for June 7th this year. It's been very successful. In the last 5 years, it's raised over $400,000. And many people just pledge for their friends or family members to actually walk, and many people come and walk, and many people just make donations because they can't participate for whatever reason. Very important support. We have a fantastic partnership with Moose FM, and one of the elements of that partnership is our annual radiothon / telethon. This year will be September 4th, which is the Friday before Labor Day weekend. And in the last 5 years, we've raised almost $300,000. And last year was fantastic. Last year, the total raised was $103,000 in 1 year, which went to our surgical suite update project, which we are updating all all of the equipment and technology, floor to ceiling, and I mean floor to ceiling, even the floor coverings and the ceiling lights in the operating rooms, the three operating rooms, the endoscopy room, the medical device reprocessing department, expanding some of the surgical services with new options for people with cancer, including new breast cancer surgeries. An ophthalmologist has joined the surgical team, and a urologist has joined the surgical team. We're still working on that project. That's a $2.5 million project. We've raised about $1.9. I'm hoping that we'll be able to wrap that up by the end of this year, because, to be honest, the hospital's buying the equipment, and they're giving us the bills, so we've got to pay for them. Driving for diagnostics, if you're a golfer, that's September 19th this year. Please put it in your calendar. We're back at the Parry Sound Golf and Country Club. And a new event that we started last year in partnership with the Hospice West Parry Sound is Lights of Love, where people can have the name and photo of a loved one that they have lost included in a projection that we create and show on the outside of the hospital for a week in November. And it was a very moving evening. You may be aware that Donald Sanderson plays the bagpipes, and so he did for this occasion, and we had a little ceremony inside in Lakeland, and then he piped our group outside and played Amazing Grace while the presentation shone on the outside of the building, and people were so happy to be able to see and acknowledge and recognize the people that they had lost. And I was quite surprised in some ways, because I expected that the names and the faces that we would see would be of people who had mostly passed away very recently. But there were people who had passed away 20, 30 years ago, and the families just needed to acknowledge it and be at a different place than they were perhaps in their grieving process earlier. And we'll be doing that again this year. I'll be honest, it's not really a fundraiser for the foundation. We simply cover our costs. It is to help the West Parry Sound Hospice, because they're a much smaller organization and they're a very important partner for the hospital. And then this year we're bringing back the Classic Boat Tour and Auction. This was first piloted in 2023, and we're expanding it. And this is our only event that is 100% aimed at people who don't live here. So this is aimed at people who either have cottages on Lake Joseph or Lake Rosso, or wish they had cottages on Lake Joseph or Lake Rosso. Though, of course, anyone who does live here and wants to participate is more than welcome. But we have 22 people who own antique or classic wooden boats who donated their boat and themselves as the driver for the day. And they have put together various tours of the lakes that they're on. And we will be auctioning off those experiences online. The auction starts May 14th. And then on July 25th, all the auction winners will arrive at a marina on Lake Joseph or Lake Rosso. We'll match them up, make sure they get on the right boat, make sure they have a wonderful time, and then everyone will end up at a private cottage on Lake Joseph for a VIP reception. And it's shaping up really nicely. We're very excited about that. And I have to say, this is my favorite, because these boats are just drop-dead gorgeous, these boats. Please visit our website, follow us on Facebook if you want to see some wonderful pictures and hear some wonderful stories. I was speaking to a gentleman. The boat that he has put into this auction was built in 1925, I believe, and his father found it, basically brought him in a barn, and they restored it back up to mint condition, and it's spectacular. So there's a few boats like that in this auction. But I want to circle back, if I may, to walk, run, pole. I've been speaking to councils across the region, and when I spoke to Seguin, the mayor and council, to my immense pleasure, volunteered to put a team in. And when I mentioned that to the Archipelago, they volunteered to put a team in. So I am presenting to you, can you keep it going? Would you consider entering Walk, Run, Pole as the team for McKellar and helping us raise funds to complete our surgical sweep? And you don't have to answer me tonight, but I would just ask you to please consider it. Next slide, please. So what's next for the foundation? Well, I've been working in fundraising my whole career. I've worked with many different organizations across the country, universities and hospitals, as well as smaller organizations. And I can tell you that this is a very competitive sector. Fundraising is very competitive. You might not think of charities as competing with each other, but only about 17% of Canadians claim charitable tax receipts on their income tax. So that's a very small percentage of the population that makes enough donations for them to care that they get the tax credit. And there are about 90,000 charities in Canada. And many, so almost all of them, rely on donations to operate. So it's very competitive, and we need to be aware of that, and we need to continue to demonstrate that we are good stewards, and we are accountable, and we are using donor dollars as they intend, and to continue to innovate and to think about the future. Because the population in this region is growing, the demand for healthcare from the hospital will never decrease, and equipment will never be made that lasts forever. So there will always be a need for the foundation. I very much appreciate the opportunity to come here tonight, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, Councillor Zulak.
Yes, so I'm curious, the beds, the sheets, the dishes, is that all paid for by the,
yes,
everything except for the walls?
The walls, there's
the clothing,
everything,
surgical
linens. There's a program that helps cover the cost of the actual building, but it has to be applied for, it's not for operating funds. So as an example, the hospital is replacing the entry doors. I don't know if you've been there recently, but they have automatic doors that kind of open like this, whoosh.
Yeah.
And they're not really very good for people in wheelchairs because they're very slow, they take a long time to open, and they need to be replaced with the sliding automatic doors for better accessibility. So the hospital was successful in getting a grant from the province for that. And there's some grants available for HVAC and electrical and things like that. But for instance, if the province gives permission for the purchase of an MRI machine, then the hospital has to build a space for that. They've got it all marked out, but they have to build the space for that. They have to pay for all the electrical. They have to pay for the IT connections into the network. Everything has to be paid for outside of the operating budget of the hospital.
Okay.
Councillor Ryan?
I know this is not necessarily the foundation, but the question that I have, I've had a number of appointments in downtown Toronto, so have some family members, and it is fairly constant that they don't realize that we even have a CT machine here, right? And constantly they tell you that you have to travel to Toronto to do this in their hospital, so that's UHN basically that's doing that. But it's astounding to me that there isn't some way for a doctor to look up and say, what is at your local hospital? I know we don't have an MRI, and that's a big deal too, but CTs are probably far more common in my experience than MRIs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and I've had some other situations with just healthcare in general, with other hospitals other than Parasound that can't see tests or results that were done in Parasound. And I talked to Ray Smith at one point when he was here. It hasn't gone anywhere, but I mean, it's the same kind of thing. It's like we're this little island that people don't think have current equipment. I know our CT machines, I think we have two.
One, but it's brand new. Yeah.
Okay, but is newer than the ones that those other hospitals have themselves, and yet they don't know. So it's a battle to tell them, I don't want to travel to Toronto, I want to travel to Paris and get it done. But it's a constant problem, that's all.
I would say, I don't think it's reassuring in any way, but it's the island concept is quite, I think, accurate, but it's not just Parry Sound on its own island. Every hospital is on its own island in Ontario. The Parry Sound Hospital was a pioneer in networking with other hospitals, but their hospitals are in the northeast region of Ontario, so they do share what's called Meditech, which is a patient record management system. So there are some hospitals where doctors can share records, but it is a local network. It's not province-wide. It's something the provincial government has been talking about for decades, really. But yes, it is incredibly frustrating.
Any questions from council? Ask people online as well if you have any questions. All pretty quiet. Well, thanks very much for your presentation.
Thank you very much.
I guess we should have voted on this before. All those in favor? None opposed, carried. Safe. Safe drive back.
Thank you.
Watch for deer. On to item 11.2, resolution 26-167, moved by Councilor Ryland, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the deputation from Jeremy Beamer, H&G Control, on introduction of waste management facility program for information purposes. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Okay, Mr. Beamer, you're online, I think. Can we hear him?
No. He should be able to unmute himself.
We're still muted. I think we can't hear you, so.
That's weird.
No? Maybe on our end. We'll have a look here.
Is anything coming through the laser?
Yep. Perfect. We can hear you now.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. The wonders of technology.
Yeah.
Well, Council, thank you very much for taking the time to allow us to speak to you. My name is Jeremy Beamer. Jim here, Janice, and I are principals of GTA Strategies. We're a lobbying and consulting firm. And we're here on behalf of our client, H&G Control, to present a new waste management system, hopefully for your consideration and for your adoption. Now, H&G Control themselves are not actually in the waste management business. They are actually manufacturers of electrical control panels. But Zulfikar Miraj, their president, has more than 30 years of engineering experience. He's worked across North America, Europe, and Asia. And during his time in Germany, he connected with and made partners with a pair of other engineers that are also in different fields of engineering. And the three of them have started to develop over the last couple of years a new system using pre-existing technologies and a new way that hasn't been used before to address the issues with waste management. Now, being a municipality, you know better than we do the issues that we're facing with this. I mean, the Auditor General of Ontario put out a report a few years ago saying that they expect within the next 7 to 10 years that all landfills in Ontario will be at capacity. We are not allowing any new landfills to be created. The Minister of the Environment is not allowing new landfills to be created, but we are still making garbage. We're still trying to send it there. We're making about 12 million tons of waste a year in Ontario, and we're looking for any other options, any other way to do this. We're sending it to the U.S. We're sending it overseas, and any other option is obviously something that I think a lot of people are going to be interested in seeing. And hopefully this new system that H&G Control has put together is going to be that new system. Now, I do want to preface this by saying that this is for unsorted waste. So we're already eliminating any need for sorting into recycling or organic waste. It's not needing any kind of sorting stations ahead of time. All waste can come into this location all at one time. So this flowchart will give you an idea of what we're looking at. So once the waste comes into the facility, the first thing is that all the moisture is removed. After that, once the waste is, all the moisture is removed from it, it is put through a ball sorter. That sorting system separates everything into its base components. Anything that can be recycled and reused, metal, glass, stone, separated out, and they can be resold to generate revenue. Anything that doesn't meet that purpose, what's called a waste-derived fuel, is then put through a system called pyrolysis. Pyrolysis is a high-temperature decomposition and that is done inside a vacuum. So rather than just simple incineration, this is done at extreme temperatures in an oxygen-free environment, which leads it to breaking down things to basically nothing. There's two main byproducts, coke and gas. Now, coke as itself is a high-carbon product that can be used as a fuel source. It's still used in a number of processes in, say, steel and copper manufacturing. Although Canada's moving away from that, there's still the U.S., there's still a number of other countries that use coke as a fuel source. And then the gas that's created as a result of this is filtered into a gas generator. And that generator is going to create electricity. Now, under normal kind of peak operating, this site generator, about 20% of the electricity generated would be enough to power the facility itself. The remaining 80% can actually be sent back into the grid in order to power local homes, businesses, schools, and so on. So we're looking at a system that is going to create an almost net zero waste management procedure. It's going to be about 95 to 98% of waste is going to be eliminated. It is creating electricity, so you're not drawing from the grid, you're actually putting it back in. You're eliminating any kind of greenhouse gases and pollution in the air because it's using those gases in a closed system rather than just off-gassing it into the atmosphere. And one of the other main goals of this is to actually take not only waste that would be created now, but to take existing landfill waste, mine it out, and actually be able to process it down to the point where we would be able to reclaim that land, and you would be able to use it for other purposes, like building homes, building parks, things like that. Now, as I mentioned earlier, these technologies themselves are not new. For example, pyrolysis is used in things like tire manufacturing. There are a number of naval ships that the U.S. military has. They use pyrolysis to deal with their waste rather than just dumping it off over the side. But this would be the first location of its kind anywhere in the world that would use all these technologies together. Because of that, we're dealing with the Minister of Environment as well as the Premier. We've spoken to both of them. They're both very excited about the potential for this technology. We're in the process of working with the ministry officials themselves to sort of what kind of environmental or ecological research needs to be done to confirm that that this is going to be effective. But in the meantime, we're reaching out to municipalities such as yours just to introduce the technology, to introduce us and see, garner what kind of interest there might be for local municipalities to take on something like this. We're not looking for any kind of purchase or any kind of monetary funds. Really, all we're looking for is a site. This is going to be operating on what's called a BOOT system, B-O-O-T, Build, Own, Operate, Transfer. So the company is going to be funding this using government grants as well as investor income. So the municipality will not have to put up any kind of funds to run this or to operate it. Once it gets going, once everybody's been kind of gotten their money back, at a certain point, if the municipality wants to transfer in, or they can just keep sending the garbage there and allow their organization to keep running it, that's something that we would kind of assess afterwards. But we're just looking right now at most for an expression of interest, just to kind of see what kind of interest the municipality has in taking on something like this. So, again, I want to thank you for your time. We will we'll try to answer any questions that you may have. I won't be able to do much as far as the engineering side of it. I'm not an engineer, but any questions that we can answer, we will do our best.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the information. Any questions from council? Maybe just start off, have you approached other municipalities in the Westbury Sound area?
We've reached out to basically every municipality in Ontario. We've not spoken to anyone in the Prairie Sound region yet, but we have spoke. We've had say upwards of about 30 meetings so far with municipalities of varying sizes across Ontario.
you tell me, Jeremy, what's the environmental impact of this pyrolysis?
Next to zero. As I mentioned, it is a closed system. Any kind of vapors, any kind of gases that are created are left under pressure and are funneled into the generator in order to create electricity. Any kind of eventual off gases are filtered. They are cleaned before they're sent off, but there is little to no environmental impact. But again, this is something that that the Ministry of the Environment is going to be looking at as we move forward. But again, these technologies are not new. They're in use across the world. This is just going to be the first site of its kind that uses them all together in this fashion.
Jim has his hand up.
Sorry?
Jim?
Jim wants to speak, okay. I can't pronounce his last name, so. Go ahead.
It's all right, don't worry about it. Just to your worship and esteemed counselors. Just, I realized that at the beginning you said this is just to receive for information. I might want to encourage you that if you're interested in your municipality, this is not only going to be a waste transfer station and a waste management, but once this thing is up and running, we will be looking for a site in order to build things because we will be exporting them to the rest of the world. At the present time, we're in conversations with the ministry. But the instructions of the minister, the bureaucracy is looking at this very serious, and we are doing the environmental process and due diligence. One of the things that will be needed is a specific site location. So if your municipality is interested in creating jobs, you know, like just the work, number one, in the waste management facility of about anywhere between 75 to 100, as well as the follow-up factory putting these machines together, you know, that you might want to take the next step and say, listen, we would like to talk to you and see a little bit more of the engineering process. Now, this could be done at the life of this council or even the next. But we'd be very interested in visiting your town, sitting down, chatting with you, and moving the file forward. This is a job creation scenario. And like we said, it's built, own, operate, transfer. Zero cost of the municipality. We'll build, we'll own, we'll operate, and at some point in time, we need to say, do you want it? Or if you say no, we'll continue operating it.
Okay. Good information.
Thank you.
Any other questions from council? I was just concerned about, and of course, we'd have to do a lot of research on this, the liability involved too with our insurance company. For a site like this, but I'm not sure you could touch on that one.
The site will be standalone and it will be insured on its own. And certainly the factory will carry a lot of insurance on itself in order to cover the municipality.
Okay. Anybody online wish to ask questions? Okay, well, thanks very much for your presentation. And,
thank you.
Yeah, appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know.
And we've moved the agenda items around, so we're on to 17.5. We have Resolution 26-168, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive report and MIN 2026-06, and further, the Council approves the sole source procurement of a Ford F-350 pickup truck for the Public Works Superintendent in accordance with Section 8.12 of the Township's procurement bylaw, and further, does hereby award the purchase of a 2026 Ford Super Duty F-350 4x4 truck to Bourgeois Ford for a total purchase price of $77,071.71, including applicable taxes and fees. Further, the Council authorized staff to obtain written quotations from local dealerships for the purchase of a half-ton pickup truck for parks operations, with such quotations to be reported back to Council for final award. Discussion? Now, we have the Public Works Superintendent here as well. He may want to add a little information. Tom, it's all yours.
appreciate you having me on the agenda tonight, because it was kind of last minute. I've been struggling trying to create the old-fashioned tender that we usually put out for small vehicles, and it doesn't work. Our system doesn't seem to jive with the system of the salespeople at the car dealerships, and we have a hard time getting a price, or we get one because they're trying to match sort of our wish list, and they end up ordering it, and we get a vehicle 6 months later at a much higher price. While I was doing my research on this one, there is a vehicle available at the Pushawak Ford in town, and it's identical to what I was going to expect. It's fairly basic. It's a very heavy-duty work truck, because we use it for work. So when I spoke to the gentleman, explained our dilemma in trying to deal with them in the past. Spoke to the manager, and he came out and apologized, because he said they truly want our business. They don't want us going further afield for service. And they said, let's work up a price for you on that right now. And I said, well, hang on, that doesn't meet, you know, council makes the decisions, and you guys are sort of in an instant world. They hand you a price, and you make a decision. But they worked the price up for me anyways, and it's very good. A $6,500 rebate rate from Ford Canada for fleet, which is even higher than the dealer expected. They're usually around $3,000. And then the dealer knocked off another $50-some hundred because we're able to pay cash, and they want our business. They've told me they've purchased the old YMCA, and they're turning it into an 11-bay shop. That's where their dealership will be located in the near future. So I came to Carly, and she got it on the agenda for me tonight, and since then I've done my due diligence. I've reached out to the other dealers, Chevy and Dodge, that are local. You know, I didn't go through the process of seeing what their discounts were, but they didn't have anything similar in stock or anything the same. They had some things that were similar, a little lighter duty, and the prices on them were identical or more. So if I take that into consideration, if they gave us the same discounts as Ford did, we would be back down to a very similar price. So I don't think we're stretching or we're doing anything that we shouldn't be doing to do our due diligence by buying this Ford that is in stock and is exactly the truck that we need. And it's available immediately.
And that has the plow hook up too. You'd have to do the plow separately, I don't.
Yeah, I'll purchase the plow separately. This truck has what they call a plow prep package, which is very hard to say when we're in public. Already included in it, which gives it dual batteries, a heavier alternator, and a bunch of other stuff.
Now the price is certainly appealing compared to what we put in the budget for it, and this is coming in a lot less, which is great. And local service, of course, too. And what happens to the old vehicle? How are you driving now?
I will, when everything's done and we have the new vehicle in hand and it's ready to go, I will ask you to declare it surplus, and I will advertise on GovDeals.
Okay,
get rid of it.
Councilor Zulak?
Does it have air?
Yes.
It does, because I just noticed here it says options.
It's very well equipped for an XL. It's an XL, so it's a work truck. It's a base model.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's very well equipped.
Yeah, because I just noticed under options it said
it does
here.
AC.
Yeah. What's the warranty?
I'm not sure off the top of my head. Before, it's standard warranty. I didn't ask for anything extra. I didn't expect to be speaking to you tonight. I figured we would lose it. Because that's the other thing I learned. In looking for a regular cab pickup truck, they're not a popular item anymore, so
yeah.
The car manufacturers aren't making a lot of them.
Yeah. No, I was just curious what the warranty would be on it.
I can find it.
Yeah.
But it's their standard warranty.
Yeah. Okay.
And you've had experience with this particular model?
Ford?
Yes. I plowed all my life with Ford trucks. And maybe it's just me. I've tried Chevys and I've tried Dodges, and I seem to get stuck more often than the others. And then I don't know. Maybe it's me. I think they're all good trucks, but when it comes to heavy duty trucks, I prefer the Ford. And that's sort of my point tonight is that pricing is so close on them. If we did go to tender and get the exact truck from each, that it comes down to preference or reliability, or it's just general knowledge, and it's if they're within $1,000, I would always go for the Ford. In a heavy truck, not
yep.
You go to a 150, I would might lean towards the Chevy.
Councilor Haskin. So now I know why you and Ward get along so well, because he's a Ford fan.
Yes.
So. But it's amazing how what a better deal you can get off a vehicle sitting on a lot rather than ordering one. So for that reason, I believe it's true. This is a very good price for that truck. So.
And I intend to do, we need a truck for the Parks Department as well. I intend to do the same thing with it. It's mentioned in this report, is I'm going to sit down with all the dealers to see what they have in stock or what they can get easily in a dealer trade that meets my sort of wish list. I'm not going to prepare a tender because it's too rigid, mm-hmm. and they tend to try and satisfy your tender. I think shortly before the next council meeting, so that it's on the agenda, because their prices aren't good for very long. You're sort of asked to make a decision while you're sitting there, and our world doesn't work that way. So I think I'll go fairly close to the council meeting again, and I'll see what they have in stock, and we can pick the best vehicle for that. It's not, doesn't need to be so heavy duty. I mean, it pulls a lawnmower around and transports some employees.
Yeah, probably 1,500.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions from council? Sounds excellent. All the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. We also moved item 17.3 while Tom is here. Have resolution 26.169, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Haskin. Be it resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives report PW-2026-01 from Deputy Clerk Mary Smith for information purposes, and further that the following quotations are to be received and awarded as outlined. First is 2026-05-LC, delivery and application of 195,840 liters of liquid calcium chloride awarded to Pollard Distribution, bid amount $88,127 plus HST of $11,456.51 for total bid amount of $99,583.51. And 2026-06, gravel to supply, deliver, and stockpile 3,500 tons of 7/8 inch quarried crushed granular A gravel and 500 tons of granular B gravel, awarded to Weeks Construction, bid amount $76,550 plus HST $9,951 for a total bid amount of $86,501.50. And tender 2026-07 to supply and stockpile and sand dome 3,000 tons of washed granular screenings, winter sand, awarded to Weeks Construction, bid amount $69,757.50 plus HST $9,068.47 for total bid amount of $78,825.97. I could open it to discussion, but maybe get Tom back up and just how that compares to what we have budgeted for, and those figures, what do you think those are good figures for us?
All tenders came within budget. It was very competitive this year, a little bit of a shakeup because we've become complacent over the last few years because, it is with the calcium, the liquid calcium, Daly's always done it. Yeah. And so I reached out and checked all references and spoke to the company, and they've satisfied me that they'll give us the same service as Daly, so I don't have any reservations about it. And the other tenders are the same. very competitive process. Surprised to see Weeks Construction in on the granite screenings, the wash granite screenings, but I've spoken to them. They are washing granite screens now, and they were using them last winter. And we have a spec in the tender. He's going to provide me with the testing on that that proves it meets our spec, and so there's no reason to question. Their price is very good on it. Mm-hmm. And they indicated they can do it earlier in the year. They'd like to do it sort of as soon as half loads are off, so it doesn't interfere with fall when they get a little bit busier. But for me, that's excellent. It'll go in the dome when it's dry, and rather than in October when it's raining.
Sounds good. Any questions from council? There's room over there at the public works area for the sand to come in and the gravel. And
I have to park on the highway now, but we can still fit some in there.
Okay. And just, well, this is not necessarily with this one, but we had two other tenders out there too. Could you just give us the background on those?
Which two?
One for the portable washrooms.
Portable washrooms came in again very competitive, well within budget. Same service provider as last year, so.
And the locations for those? Do you, top of your head, where were they going to be located? Minerva Park?
Where they always have been, yeah. Minerva Park. I think there's one here for the kids playing t-ball. There's one at the transfer station.
Yep.
I'm not sure if there's any more.
And the brush cutting?
Brush cutting, same contractor as previous years.
Okay.
They've done an excellent job for us. Well within budget. I don't even think he upped his price this year, even with the change in fuel prices.
Excellent. Okay, anything else from council? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Thank you for all your due diligence, and to Mary too for working on this. Nice to have it done early in the year, I think, to get all this in place.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. You don't
see
me anymore.
Nice again.
Have a good
day. We've got your cell number if we need.
Okay. I'll FaceTime
me. Yeah. On to item 14.1, resolution 26-170, moved by Councillor Haskam, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of Teller does hereby approve the minutes of the April 7th, 2026 regular meeting of Council. April 15th, 2026, special closed meeting of council as circulated. Any discussion on those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. On to item 15.1, resolution 26-171, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Ryland. Be resolved the Council of Corporation of the Township of McKellar has no objections to the approval of consent application number B07/2026 McKellar, as applied for by Krista LeBlanc, subject to the following conditions. Number one, payment of a fee in lieu of parkland is required in the Township of McKellar fees and charges bylaw. Number two, 911 addressing for the proposed new lot. Three, confirmation from the applicant's solicitor that the lot addition will merge with the benefiting lands. And four, payment of any applicable planning board fees. Discussion. I think we have Patrick online as well.
I'm here.
Okay, good. We'll just have you maybe, we have all the information, but maybe just walk us through what's being applied for here, and appreciate that.
Sure. The subject lands are two existing lots on, one on McKellar Lake and both fronting on Highway 124. The proposed severance would divide the existing storage business from the Dannertog and LeBlanc residence that is noted as the benefiting lot, and also a lot addition from the neighboring lot, 746 Highway 124, to the LeBlanc and Dannertog residence. And separating 746 Highway 1, or I guess the remainder of 746 Highway 124, and also a right-of-way that would share the existing driveway at 746 Highway 124 for access to the residential Dennertag and LeBlanc dwelling over the proposed lot addition. A lot going on, but fairly straightforward. One of the reasons for the lot addition is not only for the access, but also to add a large portion of the 746 Highway 124 frontage to the residential lot, because most of the residential lot right now does not have lake frontage, and there's significant type 1 habitat. This lot addition would include some area outside of fish habitat for the residential property. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. And you said MTO has been consulted on this?
Circulated as within the 60-meter circulation, yes.
Okay, so that would be a shared driveway then with the two lots?
That's right. Shared between the proposed lot addition lands and the existing driveway to 746.
Okay. And just for clarification, I'm not sure if the maps are exactly the same. The benefiting lot is to the north?
Yes, the lot addition lands will go to the existing well.
Okay. And there is access to the retained lot. Obviously, that's a separate entrance there from MTO, right?
That's correct. It's an existing commercial business there.
One other question I had, I don't know whether much hangs on it really. I noticed in the zoning there was a part of it is commercial and then part of it's industrial, M1. The rest is sort of a residential, but is there any problem with the M1 and the C1.1? Are they pretty well the same, or there doesn't have to be any rezoning done there?
No, I think I indicated in my report that there were some slivers that were going to be left over that were RWF1. That can be cleaned up at a later time, in my view. The M1 and C1 are existing zonings to do with the storage business.
Okay, and that is all one of the uses, the storage in both of those zones?
Right.
It seemed to me there was a question a while back whether the, I don't know if it was industrial or commercial, which one didn't contain the storage area as one of the uses, but if they are covered, that they can be used in either zone.
Yes, and there was a fairly recent rezoning of the storage business to reflect that and its boundaries.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from council? Now I noticed that the planning meeting that was might be scheduled for this coming Monday has been postponed, so it won't be looked at until into May.
That is correct, yes. I had this one and another one in Whitestone, and the one in Whitestone didn't make it to Whitestone Council, so they had a full agenda and I had some other timing issues, so it'll be dealt with in May.
Okay, and the applicant's okay with that, I guess, or probably the sooner the better, but
right, as far as I know.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
To item 16.1, resolution 26-172, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Haskin. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the District of Parry Sound Social Services Administration Board Chief Administrative Officer's Report for March 2026 for information purposes. Any discussion? Call the question. All in favor? None opposed? Carried. To item 16.2, resolution 26-173, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the Parry Sound Area Planning Board meeting minutes for February 23rd, 2026 for information purposes. Discussion? Could be correct that the name hasn't been changed yet, so. Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. We'll do item 17.1, resolution 26-174, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Zulak. The result of Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the admin 2026-04, Balsam Road Telecommunications Tower report from Clerk Administrator Carly Britton for information purposes. Discussion? Councillor Kekkonen.
So I think it's important that we take into consideration the Max Tower report that we received August 22nd, 2024. And in the report, it raises serious concerns, and concerns being the reasons why council decided to build a new communications tower for the fire department. In the report, have a page number, but anyways, under galvanizing, the condition of the galvanizing on the entire tower and hardware is poor. The rust and corrosion can be seen through many layers of paint, likely impacting the structural integrity of structural tower members. Safety system, there is no rail or cable system attached to the tower. Tower compound, the tower base and compound area in general appear to be in satisfactory condition as far as workability goes, however. We feel that the area should be fenced in to limit access to the tower and shelter as a minimum. An anti-climb of some sort should be present on this tower. The state of this tower is quite poor. The structural tower members are corroded along the entire tower. Guy wires and connections are rusty as well. And the age of this tower has had significant impact on some of these items. As an opinion, it would be a pertinent idea to plan a replacement of this tower, as it is well beyond its useful life cycle. And from information provided during the site visit, tower members show considerable corrosion. Tower guy wires and guy connections show considerable corrosion. The existing 200-foot tower on 10 Balsam Road, McKellar, Ontario, with existing loading does not satisfy the requirements of CSA S37-18 and is in very poor condition. Recommendations. This tower, in our opinion, should be replaced. Urgency of this is a priority. There is not enough upgrades, reinforcing that can be done in order to bring this tower within CSA guidelines. So, has our insurance company been advised of this proposal? And not only insurance company, but has this gone through a legal opinion?
If you're referencing the agreement from NetSpectrum, I have not had a legal opinion on it, but I can provide it to the solicitor to obtain one.
I'm reviewing some information regarding telecoms and landowner liability. Who is responsible for injuries on your property? Because the township would still be owning that property. Shared responsibility, who pays when things go wrong? Determining liabilities for injuries involving telecom equipment on private land often involves a complex interplay of factors. In many cases, both the landowner and the telecoms company may share responsibility. Here are some scenarios where liability may arise. Equipment failure. If a cell tower collapses due to faulty construction or inadequate maintenance, both the landowner and the telecom company could be held liable. The landowner may be liable for failing to ensure the equipment was safely installed, while the telecoms company may be liable for negligent maintenance. Falls from height, and as you see, read here, does not have fall rest equipment on it. Telecoms workers often need to climb towers or access rooftops to perform their duties. If a worker falls and is injured due to inadequate fall protection, both the landowner and the telecoms company could be liable. The landowner may be liable for failing to provide a safe working environment, while the telecoms company may be liable for failing to provide proper safety equipment and training. Electrical hazards, telecoms equipment can pose electrical hazards if not properly installed and maintained. If someone is injured due to the electrocution, both the landowner and the telecoms company could be liable. Mitigating risks, steps landowners can take. While leasing your land to telecoms equipment can be a lucrative opportunity, it's essential to take steps to mitigate the risks and protect yourself from potential liability. Here are some recommendations. Consult with an attorney before signing any lease agreement. Consult with an attorney who specializes in telecom law. An attorney can review the agreement and advise you on your rights and obligations. Negotiate the lease agreement. Don't be afraid to negotiate the terms of the lease agreement to ensure it adequately protects your interests. Pay close attention to liability clauses and insurance requirements. And somehow we're responsible to conduct regular inspections, regularly inspect the property to ensure the telecoms equipment is in good condition and poses no safety hazards. Document your inspections and properly address any issues you identify.
Other comments?
So, what if you were to sell the piece of property with the tower on it? Would you be responsible for anything?
Well, I think it all comes back. First of all, part of that is our Balsam Trail goes through that property.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, that's an option, but the I think as Councillor Kekkonen said, what bothers me is that we were told by this company. And by our fire department, that that tower was just, we weren't even given an opportunity, I don't think it was offered to us, upgrading the structure to meet CSA standards. I can't recall, maybe council can, whether that was even an option provided to us. I'm not sure of any costs that were presented that we could upgrade it rather than build a new tower. So it's bothered me a little bit, I guess. If we weren't offered that option, we were told, you know, it's hazardous, it has to come down, and we have to build a new, and we want the better communications actually for the fire department and maybe other departments within the township. So I think now, whether that's really due diligence on our part, if we let it stand, when we were told that it shouldn't be there,
right,
it had to come down. Councillor Keck?
No, I think it sort of sums it up in the 12.0 recommendations. This tower, in our opinion, should be replaced. Urgency of this is a priority. There is not enough upgrades, reinforcing that can be done in order to bring this tower within CSA guidelines.
Mm. So I wonder how this company expects to do that then, if they want to upgrade it to the CSA standard. Maybe they have different standards than what we require. I don't know, but it is a questionable thing. The liability concerns me because we don't even know, even through the agreement, I guess, whether they've met the standards. Is there anything in that bylaw or in that agreement that says that, like, who inspects to see if they've met the standards? And certainly the township can't do that. We don't have the expertise unless we hire somebody else. And do we want to take on that added responsibility? As I say, the Balsam Trail goes right through there, through the one corner. If something were to happen to it, people on the trail could be affected.
Although not mentioned in the report, we do have money in the 2026 budget to decommission the Balsam Road Tower. So if council is uncomfortable with the lease agreement with this telecom company, we still are planning to decom the tower this spring, and we do have money set aside for that. So just wanting to put that out there as well.
Yeah.
Councillor Zula?
Yes, that was included, right, when we were doing the new tower, that decommissioning the old tower was included.
Yes,
yeah.
So Max Tower has been retained to do that.
Yes.
This was more or less Net Spectrum's last kick at the can to say that they would like to see the tower still stand and they wanted to acquire it. But if council's not comfortable with that, then we just decommission it. And they've been giving their 1 year's notice,
yes.
So we don't owe them anything.
Councillor Kekkonen?
I think, you know, with the information, with the qualified report that we received from Max Tower, in good conscience, we could not lease this and continue for it to stand, knowing that it's basically being condemned. Otherwise, if we could have made these upgrades, we most likely would have, so that we wouldn't have had to build a new structure for, can't remember the exact price, but I think it was close to a couple hundred thousand dollars, which money we could have allocated to other asset management priorities within the municipality. So in good conscience, I could not support this as a councillor.
Councillor Zulak.
So if next spectrum, the only other thing is that next spectrum came back to us with a proposal to have it updated and an engineer and everything, it would be a different group than Max Tower, obviously, but that I think that's the only way that you could let that move forward. And if they came with saying that they were going to upgrade it to the standards that it's supposed to be, other than that, you can't let it stand.